Welcome to the Terror Dome, baby.
We swarm, baby.
Welcome to the Terror Dome.
We swarm, let them loose.
We swarm, baby.
We swarm, baby, all day long.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to a new era of Tales from the Terror Dome. This is the Believe Network era of Tales from the Terror Dome. The ink is dry. The deal is done. Your boy is a part of a network. I don't have to do it solo anymore. I have support, and I felt like the first episode on this new network, it was only right to, bring on two people that have supported me probably more than most in the podcast space. I know we all support each other, but some are more frequent guests than others. They don't really need too much introduction. Now, this will be on YouTube. You can see their beautiful faces. We have Pete B from Too Deep, and we got Brian Siegler from Boundary Corner. How y'all doing?
What's up, Dan, man? Thanks for having us on the debut episode of the new network.
Yeah, man. It was interesting. It was like mid-May, I think they reached out to me, or like early May, and I didn't see it till like the end of May. Because a lot of the Terradome email stuff is just like spam, or like I think I signed up with 247 with it. So it's just like stuff from there. And like I've gotten some stuff before, but it was like clearly just like bait almost, you know? Mm-hmm. But this one seemed kind of like legit. So I reached back out, and you know, after we had like 2 weeks worth of back and forth, and finally I was like, you know what? I looked at the contract. I had like two of my lawyer friends look at the contract, and they were like, this is legit. And I was like, can't hurt me, can only help me. So here we are, man.
Good shit, man. If you don't believe, you can be gone.
Yeah. Believe, B-L-E-A-V, Believe Network. And I asked them straight up. I was like, you said you liked the show. Like, what do you like about it? And they gave me like specific stuff. Like they've been tracking it for a minute. So I was like, you know what? All right, you passed the test. Let's get it.
Nice, dude. Well, were they complimentary of what? Was it Grayson? Was it myself? Was it Brian? Was it some of your guests?
They said they actually were complimentary of everyone. They said what they said was, we are very relieved. Like, we checked you out and it wasn't atrocious. Like, you had a mic, you had great sound. Everyone brought meaningful content to the brand. And I was like, well, thank you. Because they're from LA. They don't know anything about Virginia Tech. You know what I'm saying? They're like, our goal is to have a podcast for every team. And I was like, well, I'm honored to fly that flag, baby.
There you go, man. Congrats.
Represent that maroon and orange, baby.
Absolutely. And it's June. We fly other flags in June. It's Men's Mental Health Awareness Month. You know, hope y'all are doing well over there. It's hot out there today. It tested me. It tested my mental today, baby. It did. But, you know, we're here.
Hey, man, I got to go out on a ship in the Atlantic Ocean tomorrow. So y'all be with me tomorrow.
You're cruising?
So I'm going to see we got a wind energy project off the coast of Virginia Beach. So I'm going out there to look at the site tomorrow. So,
oh, okay. This is not for vacation. This is, no. This is work.
this is work.
I got you. Yeah, we wish you luck and safe travels. I know you and Curtis have done the cruise thing before. I actually got a cruise coming up this summer myself, so I might have to bend your ear about some tips for when you're on the boat.
Yeah,
get the drink back. Cruises.
yeah, I get that. Man, it's been kind of a slow off season for the Hokies. Like, there hasn't really been. It almost feels like Pry and company have like pulled the reins back, like closed the doors a little more on like what's going on, which I mean is fine. Like, but for us, like last year, it felt like there was a lot more, like you don't see very much on social media. Like, you don't really see much of anything. So it's kind of been for me, like, you know, the past 3 years I've done, was there 32 weeks in an off season. I've done at least 32 episodes in off season for the last 3 years. So this year I was like, you know what? Like, the Cubs are good. I'm going to put more energy into watching baseball. I'm going to go to all these concerts. I'm going to go to Myrtle Beach, see my friends. Like, I'm just going to do. And if I get interesting guests in the meantime, like, I'm going to do that. But I haven't been, like, chasing. Like, there's been some that fell through. But I know I had Aaron Rouse, which was awesome. Mike Crawford, yeah,
that was awesome.
Hell of a story. Y'all are on here, so like we finally got some. Seems like there's some. It's about that pride time of summer, right? Starting to get some things rolling. We had a decommit, which I never thought. Like I never had much faith that that was gonna stick.
But both feet weren't in the boat from Jump Street, so it's like you kind of said. This is great, but we're probably going to lose him at some point.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, there's been a lot of, pullback of the reins. I knew early on in the offseason when I reached out, I was like, here's some I'd like to line up. And I got, well, we can definitely work with you on the combine, guys. And I'm like, all right, that's different.
Yeah.
So I could tell it was going to set up a little different. So, like Dan, I haven't really done a whole lot of pavement pounding on that front because I felt like, and just based on the interactions, there's been a big pullback. And I think some of it's just you had so much gas last year and you didn't follow through with it. And I feel like there's this sense of not wanting to feed the hype machine at all this year and then just see where the chips fall.
Well, you talk about Men's Mental Health Month. Well, it benefits some of us to take a step back for our own mental health when it comes to following this football team, because last season down in Nashville, it got us all right. And then we had a few more chances throughout the year that were extra gut punches, and it took the steam out of Hokie Nation. And I know it took the steam out of all of us. And maybe that is some of the, when you feel the fans detach a bit, it will kind of prevent you from like, oh, if we do this interview and get it out there, people are going to love this because people are all kind of doing what we're doing. And so it's starting to pick up again. And after the decommitment, it's been nothing but kind of good news. And Brian put a tweet out about like, we got to pick up these recruits to get to a level we normally are at. And it's starting.
Yeah. I mean, we're probably not, we might land. One, there's a Green Run kid in the top 10. We seem to have a really good track record with getting them to come to Blacksburg as of the past 2 years. So, and that would be a big one. I'll tell you what, no offense to Carnell Warren, but I will trade a wide receiving prospect for as many O-line prospects as we can get, especially good ones, because, you know, that's been our detriment for how many years now? So, like, yeah, and I think they know, like, hey, if we want to get this thing right and we want to stay around, we want to keep these jobs because we like these people in Blacksburg, and overall they seem to like us. They're just a little frustrated or a lot of frustrated with what's going on, you know, in the field. And you know, a lot of us more hardcore people are probably a little more frustrated with what's going on overall in, like, Merriman, over like all the programs. It hasn't been easy to follow anything. Virginia Tech related, but you know what? If we have to lose Carnell Warren to get a Tommy Wilder, sign me up Monday through Sunday.
Oh, big time. Because I mean, if you can't protect the quarterback, it doesn't matter how good of players you have outside. So
and we've
the
seen
more
that,
of those guys we can get in the building, the better. And thankfully it looks like we can recruit offensive line again. So not outside of what's looking forward. We've got a couple in the boat in the last, you know, week or so that that are going to help on that front, including a flip that came through today.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The kid that flipped over from Rutgers is what Dan was referring to and what Brian's referring to. 6'7", did I see, 310 pounds as entering his senior year. Like, that is that's pretty amazing, dude. And so, unlike Ron Crook, it seems as if Matt Moore is going to use the guys he's put in the draft to help the recruiting at Virginia Tech, because he's had a lot of success at West Virginia, just put another kid in the draft in Milam. And so it's nice to see that starting to pay off. What's the kid's name again, Dan?
Tyrell Simpson.
Tyrell Simpson. That's right.
Yep.
Like, yeah, I feel like Remack or Remick, however you say it. Remick? I think it's Remick.
I think it, yeah, I'm not sure.
either way, him being an all conference offensive lineman still on the team, like, I'd use that for recruiting too. You know, be like, hey, you want to know what I'm about, talk to this guy, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But it's nice to have a O-line coach in the building you know, that I mean that in every way you could think I mean that.
Literally and figuratively.
Yeah. You know, he's kids like him. He's recruiting. He's pulling kids. You know, we got one at the very end of the transfer portal. Where did he come from? He was an SEC kid, right? Was it Auburn? Came from Auburn, I think.
Muskrat.
Muskrat. So, like, hey, and you know what? That's a hell of an offensive line name, dude. Muskrat. Let's get ugly. Let's get nasty in that dirt. You know what I'm saying? Like, let's do this thing. But, like, yeah, without an O-line, you're nothing. And we have been very suspect at best at that position, like I said, the past couple of years. I mean, we even had one, like, cost us our quarterback last year. So, like, hey, you can't beat Rutgers on the field. At least take their recruits. You know what I'm saying? I'll take a Rutgers-bound offensive lineman any day, really.
Heck, yeah. And the one before that was, you mentioned green run already, but Cleveland at a green run. This green run thing's starting to be pretty amazing. And with maybe Knowledge Harrell contributing this year, you could strengthen that. If Brody Adams contributes this year in a big way, it's only going to enhance that pipeline. And if they continue to be a good high school program, that's going to greatly benefit Virginia Tech. But we're seeing it. We got the O-linemen today, and we got a couple of D-linemen, and J.C. Price still doing work there. So trenches are okay at the beginning of this cycle.
Just Bruton Price, baby.
Absolutely, man. And we saw, you know, looking back at the spring game, especially looking at just the true freshman, Knowledge Harrell stood out. So I think he's going to be at least some sort of rotational player this year. I think he's going to have at least a pretty decent impact on this defense. You know, whether he's, you know, cracking the initial two deep or not, I think he's going to see plenty of snaps on that defense.
Yeah, it looked like Knowledge was going to play. JoJo got a lot of time because of the injury to Josh Clark. This kid from Hawaii coming in, I'm sure he's going to play a substantial role in what they're trying to do. I don't know, like, what the recruiting board was supposed to look like, but apparently since, you know, Sefkis and Montgomery have came in, like, they completely scrapped the original vision board and, like, redid the whole thing. So, like, I don't know.
And I think you can tell that, right? I mean, but based on the slow start, and that's kind of what we were saying at the beginning of this segment, is just that the recruiting has been extremely slow this cycle, and it has to have something to do with the four new coaches that we hired. And they're slow, and then there's last place in the ACC in mid-June slow. And so it's to say it's slow is probably an understatement. And so I'm happy to see we climbed out of the basement today in the ACC. I know it's early, but, like, early is not as early as it used to be in June. It's 6 months from early signing period. Yep. And up until today, we were last in the ACC in the 247 rankings. And if you go by the 247 in-house rankings, we're still last. And so we need to get moving here. And it's got to have something to do with the overhaul, right, Brian?
Yeah. I mean, you saw the overhaul and you were like, all right, this is probably going to change things. The board's going to get swapped a little bit. There's certain positions that probably not a ton is going to change. Thinking particularly like cornerback, thinking wide receiver. Some of those targets are not going to change too much, but a lot of the other things that you do within this offense are going to change pretty significantly. And on the defensive side in particular, going away from a, you know, four-man front, playing probably more safeties than we're used to playing. So there's going to be some shuffling of the way you're stacking the recruitment, and the way you're backfilling at certain positions. So I think we're seeing a lot of that, and I think we're starting to see that trenches and offensive line have been the focal points, I think, overall. And that makes sense because you're doing something different up front on defense, and you need to backfill and frontfill at the offensive line position based on what you lost in the transfer portal and what you were already deficient in from a depth perspective.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Dan.
And I think, like, defensive line is probably going to be a strong point this year. I mean, Kamari Copeland, like, I tweeted, I don't even know if this dude shovels snow. I think he just lifts his car up and moves it. Like, he's in the weight room just putting up numbers again. You got Ben Bell, and then you got the Ginger Freak, James DeJonkum on the other side. You know, you got Kamari, you got Laws, you got all these dudes there in the middle. I think they really, I mean, JC Price, like, has been, I mean, JC, just cruiting. Like, this dude has been putting in work in the trenches for several years now. And I think he, like, it's time to put some respect on that man's name. And we don't know what it's going to look like. And neither does Shane Beamer. And that's a good thing. Yep. It's I think they've kind of like leaned into this whole secretive thing.
And well, I'm sorry, I interrupted you on your South Carolina.
Oh, you're good.
But I was thinking about the D line, and if you think about the units under Pry that have been the best, it's been the D line, maybe running back because of the Tootin thing. But JC, he deserves credit, and at this point, he deserves the faith that despite the fact that we lost Peoples and APR, that it should be a good unit. And I love the Ben Bell pickup. If he can live up to a little bit of what he did before and Jonkum can take the production that he put on the field on defense last year and translate it to an edge position, I am so excited to see what this D-line looks like. But you have to have faith in what J.C. Price has done, just because it's been the most successful thing that Pry has to put on the stat sheet.
Remember pre-landing APR where everyone was like, JC can't recruit? You remember that like small period, like 6 month period of time where people were like, can JC recruit? And then like it's been just hit after hit since then.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. Because we lost, we took the dude went to what, Wisconsin in like the final hour?
Yeah.
And ended up being butt cheeks up there, by the way.
Oh, yeah. The Temple kid, people, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And people were like, oh man, like JC, like he just can't hack it. We need to like da 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 da. And that kid was awful up there. And we ended up getting some dudes, and we actually performed that year pretty well.
Speaking of which, did you see, so a couple of those late additions, like the Emmanuel Hickman addition, Brian, I think he's going to play edge, but I think he was a USF kid. And then the Cody Heisman kid from North Dakota State. Those are another couple defensive line additions that may end up factoring in, less so with Hickman, but maybe down the line he does. I like what they've done because they did need to address two of the biggest guys going out the door. And in addition to the two kids we just recruited out of high school, I like those late additions to the class.
Yeah.
Especially the North, Cody Heisman really impressed me. You know, looking at some of the tape and looking at, you know, what he's been able to do so far. I think he's kind of a good tweener there. You can play a little, you know, defensive end on that three man front, can definitely hold it down inside as well. So, I'm excited to see what he can do. I think he's definitely going to factor in this year. But I mean, he's got that, like, I mean, he looks like a guy that, you know, grew up in Iowa and played at North Dakota State. I mean, I don't think there's really another way to say it. That's what he looks like. And I'm excited to see what he can do there on that defensive line.
Yeah. I think that, I mean, I don't know. None of us know, but I feel like we might see more people rotate in this year than we've seen in the prior era because they went out, they got a bunch of people. It was addition by, you know, sheer numbers, really. They were like, you know what? We're losing. Like, they went to the safety room. They completely brought in, like, 8 million safeties, like, DBs. Like, we're just – I think we're going to see – a lot of rotation. We brought in Priester, and when we brought him in, I was like, damn, too bad he plays defense. He'd be a hell of an offensive tackle because he's tall and long. And sure enough, they just moved him to the offensive line. So hopefully he'll end up being a good piece for us there at whatever point that he's ready. I feel good
speed
about
wise,
the current
that makes
line.
Sense.
Yeah.
Like if there was any criticism watching him in spring was that his get off wasn't where you would want it to be.
Blue chew.
It doesn't matter as much on the offensive line as it does on defense. I think you know where you're going, you know what you're doing. You're not having to read as much from that position. So he can be a little more deliberate with that get off as an offensive lineman compared to what he would need to be as a defensive lineman.
And that being said, they liked him. They liked just the kid himself in spring. And so they want to find a spot for him, and I think his size lends itself to offensive line. so much. I'm pumped about that because we still need bodies on the offensive line. We're only at 15. And the interesting thing now with the 105 is it does make it a little bit harder to figure out like which one of these guys are, you know, practice bodies and which one of these guys are actually going to play. Because you've got, and we're not really going to have 105 necessarily, but we're going to have like 95. We're going to have around 100. And so I'm looking at the numbers at the position. There's 18 defensive backs on this team. There's, you know, 12 linebackers for essentially two positions. So there's a lot of dudes because we are expanding these rosters.
And we moved Clatterball to DN, right?
Is that official? Did that happen?
I think they did move him.
I think that was official, yeah.
The Jack linebacker edge role?
I probably backing up Junk, I would imagine.
That would, like, in terms of game, that makes sense.
Yeah. I think, you know, he's got good length already, so it kind of makes sense in that position from a frame standpoint. You know, it looked like with some of the moves we made heading into spring that with this defense, we're not necessarily going to get bigger at linebacker. If it's still going to be like essentially safeties, oversized safeties playing linebacker, but the length is going to change. So they're looking for those longer players, but still probably not getting much south of or much north of like 225 pounds.
And Clatterball is huge. Like he was kind of already too big to play the linebacker in the system, and it, that move does make sense. I hope it suits him well.
Yeah,
me too. In retrospect, do you think Dax Holyfield would have flourished in the system by any chance?
I think he's just a true middle linebacker. Like I don't think it necessarily would have been so different. I think Dax, I don't know. It took him a while to really figure everything out and play with Ashby in front of him. That kind of delayed everything. So it's hard to say. I think Dax would have flourished in a system where he could have come in and been the guy at middle linebacker right away.
Yeah.
Looking at Dax, I mean, the problem with him at Mike is that he wasn't an elite block shedder. And then the problem with him playing outside linebacker is that he wasn't even close to elite from a speed perspective. So it's like there was always going to be a level of deficiency one place or the other. You could probably let it slide a little bit more at Mike and because he was still a solid block shedder, even if he wasn't like where you would want him to be. You know, looking at the, you know, some of the other guys we've had at the position that played it at a very high level.
Plus, and that his, what, one, he was prior for 1 year, 2 years, 1 year, right? No, 2 years. Was he two? He was 2 years with Brent Pryor. Was it one?
It was one. It was just his final year was under Marv and Pryor. Yeah.
That's right. But it, like, when he was on the field versus when Artis was on the field, completely different. Like when he was on the field, the defense like knew what the hell to do.
Oh,
like,
he had a great senior year. Like, Dax really, he had a really good senior year under Coach Marv. And when we talked to him last August, he echoed that he was sad that Marv had to be let go because he had a lot of respect for Marv. But that's all water under the bridge.
Yeah, I think Marv doing a great struggled job now. At
doing two things. I think if you gave Marv just the linebacker room, you would get a whole lot out of them. I think Marv having to also run the defense, whether you liked what he did from a schematic standpoint or not, I think having both of those responsibilities definitely were a detriment in both directions for him.
Yeah.
And there's a guy I think is going to make a hell of an impact this year. And his name is Cam Seldon. And he was a massive guy that we wanted in the beginning. And he was another reason why you don't stop recruiting people, even if they don't choose you the first time, because it's just that Pry has been very good at getting the second chance guys. Like, I can't get you now, but if you cycle back, you're coming to Virginia Tech. Like, and Cam Seldon, you know, he went to Tennessee, you know, Rocky Top, Knoxville, like Neyland Stadium, all the bells and whistles. He was behind one of the best running backs in the country, probably even out of position. You know, Dylan Sampson, obviously great running back, And now he's back here, and he's playing the Deebo Samuel Swiss Army knife on the wide receiving room role. And I mean, he had obviously the big play in the spring game, but I just think that they are going to use the hell out of this man, and I think he's going to run it up this year.
I think you're correct. I think they kind of need him to be the four star. They need him to come in and make an instant impact, because there's a lot of question marks at the wide receiver. I know we've recruited that position just about better than anywhere else, but you know, you got guys who are unproven, even Aiden Green, who contributed and had a nice bowl game and done the stuff. We need to see him do it consistently. Can he be wide receiver one? And Cam in that slot role, and if he's as dynamic as we think he can be, that's really exciting. I just think the Deebo comp is probably good, because he is a little bit more built up than your average slot receiver.
Yeah. And I mean, looking at what we've done at the wide receiver, Pete, you're right. Like, we've got a lot of talent in that room, but we also have it like probably at least one pretty decent sized question mark for everybody in that room. Mm-hmm. There's no like surefire, this is the guy, he's going to go out there and dominate, you know, open to close. You know, can Green take the next step into a leadership role in the room? You got, you know, Donovan Green, is he going to be able to come back from some of these injuries and be the player that we need him to be? You got Cam Seldon, you know, he's a little bit of a position switch coming from another program. Can he live up to that four-star billing? You got a bunch of, you know, true freshmen, redshirt freshmen that are ready to make an impact. You know, who's going to step up, and are we going to end up having enough of those guys making plays? Because we know that at least the number of plays we run is probably going to go up. Whether the wide receivers get more targets as a result of that or not, the number of plays we run is going to go up this year. So who's going to get that, and are they going to be able to make plays off of that?
The Donovan Green thing, it's a big, it's a little binary, right? It kind of reminds me of the Ollie Jennings situation going into this last year, like coming off a history of injuries, but when it's good, it's really, really good. And I'm hoping we kind of get what we couldn't get out of Ollie last year, which was a full year of health, a full year of excellent gameplay. Donovan Green could have a huge impact on this team, but I just don't know like where his body's at. And then you have a guy like Tucker Holloway coming off an injury, who was a great contributor a couple years back in spots, but on special teams, like that's the kind of X factor we need on this team as well.
You know who's really good is Tucker Holloway on that college football game, man. You put him in the slot, run that slot fade, he is fantastic. So I hope we see some of that in this offense.
Yes,
I'm just excited to have him back. Punt returning, kick returning, like he made magic happen. And I said 2 years ago, like, hey, like we burned his shirt so he could play against Liberty in 2022, and like, it's okay because we should be recruiting over his skill level by now. And luckily or unluckily, the situation is, hey, I'm glad he's still here because we need that man. And he was able to get his red shirt back last year, unfortunately for him. I know he would have rather been playing, and we would have rather had him on that field. But
true.
Yeah, I'm excited to see, you know, Aiden Green, obviously, let's match the jersey number to the number of drops, you know, zero.
The biggest
and
thing.
Then, hey, that offseason program must be working, because I saw pictures of Keelan Adams yesterday, and he's put some size on. Coming back from injury.
What did he
say,
193 or 196, something like that, I think is what Chris said he's up to now.
And Gabe looks filled out too. Gabe looks filled out too.
It was nice to see Gabe in some of those pictures, like the running picture. And I think I saw him on that weightlifting video with Cunningham. That early returns on Ferg. Are you guys hearing what I'm hearing? And that the players are working, and it's been difficult. I like the shirts too. Start fast, finish strong, something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And somebody noted today that the juice during the lifts in the videos is a lot different, because everybody was talking about last year, it's like you had Copeland throwing up almost seven bills and like it was barely any chatter behind.
Yeah, which fame was it? TJ Watt that made fun of us for it? Was some like it went JJ. Viral. Like, it was a JJ Watt.
Okay. Yeah.
He was like, why aren't these guys going crazy? And then the video of Cunningham today was like ridiculous.
Yeah, yeah, it's definitely night and day. It's definitely night and day. And it's nice to see that get right, because that's going to feed into everything that we're doing when fall rolls around. Because if you are strong and if you are have the right degree of conditioning, it's going to go a long way. Because the thing that we saw the most last year wasn't that we were getting ran out by talented teams on the other side. It's that a lot of times we gave out and we gave people the game, whether it be because of conditioning or because of, you know, bad execution late in games, or whether it be because a bad coaching decision at a key moment. Like, there was a lot of times where we weren't beat because of the talent level on the field last year.
Yeah, I talked to John McLaughlin on a Memory Lane episode last week. We talked about the Belk Bowl, and it was a great show, but John brought up this point. During that year, if you remember, Tech would kind of start games slow, and then they would get better as the game wore on. Like in the Clemson ACC championship game, we were dead, and then we weren't dead because Clemson got tired and our guys had gas. And then you go to the Belk Bowl, of course, the historic comeback, the Notre Dame game. We were down 17-0 in that game, but we outlasted them and came back. And John credited Coach Hilgard and the strength and conditioning program that, if nothing else, that team was in shape and they were able to get into those fourth quarters and come back and win those games.
Yeah. And yeah. I think, you know, looking at those teams, like, I think Hilgard had the team conditioned. They weren't as strong, especially as we went on in the Fuente era, as you would have liked them to be. I think with Deej, we were strong, but we weren't well conditioned. And I'm hoping under Ferg, we're the proper level of both.
Well, think about Hilgard. That was also Hilgard's first year. So those guys had already like gotten strong under Gentry, and then they got the conditioning. And then it was like, that's why 16 was such a magical year in at least one aspect.
Mm-hmm.
That's true.
And obviously, like, you want the reason it's such a big deal to see the players engaged in the weightlifting videos is because, one, it means they want to be there. And two, when you want it as bad for the person lifting as the person lifting wants it, that means like you really care about that person and like you're really like part of the team and you are really buying into the we mentality.
Yeah, and I think, you know, we talked about it as we opened up, but like I think the lack of chatter and respect that this team is getting, I think is helping them from a mental standpoint, because I think last year there was a lot of noise, and I think the noise got to them from a preparation standpoint as well. And it's hard not to. Like, I definitely understand that type of thing can happen. You know, when you got, you know, people, you had people throwing you in there as like a dark horse, you know, playoff team and, you know, potential ACC champion. And like, okay, well, you won seven games last year, including the bowl game. Like, okay, we need to take these incremental steps. We can't just skip a step in the process because we think we're talented enough to do so.
Yeah. Well, remember the Lovett comments where he was like, I'm glad we're the underdog because it makes you work harder. He was kind of referencing what happened last offseason, and that,
yeah,
guys did, you know, you don't think you're getting complacent. You don't think you're listening to the noise, but you are. It's just human nature. And it bit us a little bit. It might have bit us a lot of it. And so hopefully it has the opposite effect this year.
Yeah, and you've got to have a veteran leadership in the locker room and a veteran coaching staff to keep those things in check, especially when you're not prepared for it. Again, you're trying to skip a step in the process here. You've got to have a whole lot of leadership in that locker room. You've got to have a whole lot of strong leadership from a coaching standpoint to keep those things in line. And I think we were probably at least deficient in one of those areas, if not both, last year.
Yeah. And I mean, We usually win the offseason, right? I'm sure it'll ramp
Pride
back
is a
up.
Good job of winning the offseason, yes.
I'm sure there will be – it'll ramp up soon. CFB 26 is coming out. Inner Sandman's in the game. All the streamers are going to be riding us again, potentially. There's one part of the offseason we haven't won, and I need to see it. I need to see John Gruden walk into his office with a box of Virginia Tech merch, and I need him to glaze us on social media like he does everyone else. Why have we not done it yet? I don't know. Jake Malasek, if you were blocking this from happening, don't do it. But no, like, I just sent him a box of shit, man. Like, it's three. Well, it's like,
apparently Billy's working on one, right, Pete?
That's what I've heard. You know what, Billy? Someone said, like, we should send the box in, label it UVA, and have it full of tech stuff to get around the Malasek problem. Yes, yes.
He goes on air. What the fuck is this? I'm sorry. Yeah.
That would be hilarious.
What else you got over there, Dan? What are you talking about today?
Well, I mean, we influx of, you know, recruits coming into Blacksburg. There's another one hailing from, call him the Big Slovakia officially. It's not, it's a multitude of nicknames. Neo.
That's right.
Not, you know, he loves the Matrix, so hopefully he can, you know, bend and weave his way into a couple W's for the Hokies. And Mike
this
Young.
Was a, this was big. This was really big.
Young's had a hell of an offseason.
Yeah.
He really has. You want to talk about the opposite of Coach Pry. He hired Chester Frazier to come in, and instantly the recruiting went up a notch, you know? And that's not a coincidence. Chester Frazier is that dude, and not only is he going to recruit these kids, but we're going to be playing some mean defense this year in ACC play. And the Neo edition is massive. Like, Avdalis, if you haven't looked into this kid, watch some of his highlight tapes. Look at some of the scouting reports, because he was in the NBA draft combine. He was a prospective second round pick, and he really wanted to be kind of guaranteed a first round spot to stay in the draft. And he never got that promise. And so he committed to the Hokies, and he's going to play for us. He signed. It's really exciting. 6'8", about 200 pounds, but the things he can do, this is what Ed said. And I'm not sure I'm this far ahead, but Ed said, like, this is essentially a five-star coming in.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's impressive because, you know, and I want to knock on some wood real quick. You know, how many times in the last, what, 3 or 4 years that we've had a guy that we thought was going to play guard for us that didn't make it into the first game of the season. So I'm not going to jinx anything here, but we've got a guard that's coming in that is an absolute difference maker. And a guy that can get his own shot, can hit shots from all over the floor, can handle the ball very well. Like, this is the type of player that I don't think really Mike Young has had at any point in his tenure.
He's very unique, and you're calling him a guard. He could be like a point forward. The end thing here is, like, he can handle. He can distribute. He can take it to the rack. There are questions. The shot consistency, overall, staying in front of people on defense. Yeah, there are questions. But he's already 19, so I guess he would be a sophomore. You know, he's been playing in the Greek League, but age-wise, he would be a sophomore. But he's coming in. He's going to be a freshman, but he's experienced. He's been playing in the Greek League since he was 15 years old, been going up against grown men. And so I couldn't be more excited about this kid, but he was only one of the many additions. I mean, we got Amani Hansberry from West Virginia. He was a four-star a couple years back. We brought in the Pasha kid, CAA Freshman of the Year from Delaware, as a transfer. It's a total reboot, reload, and Mike Young seems motivated too. Remember that statement he put out, Dan, at the end of the year? Like, he sounds motivated to not have what happened last year happen again.
Yeah, he said, I'm not doing this again. Point blank, period. Said, I'm not doing this again.
Yeah, I think he was pissed about maybe some of the financials that went into all that kind of stuff, and maybe the football team getting a little bit more money than the basketball team or not being prioritized or whatever. But he's like, I'm not doing this again. And you can tell by the roster build out that he won't be doing it again.
And, yeah. And he targeted players that that should be eligible. So that's another point. It's like we had these situations where, you know, in most cases there were unforeseen circumstances, or at least circumstances that we at least took a calculated risk on that did not pay off for these players. And there's less of that this year, right? We didn't necessarily pin our entire well-being on, you know, one high level player coming in that we expected to do the lion's share, at least of the ball handling and things like that, that we really struggled with at a lot of points last year. Yeah, I'm interested to see how Mike Young puts all those pieces together. I know there's a lot of new pieces, but enough continuity, I feel like, to still have that foundation and you know, build the program up. So I don't think it'll be we won't have a LaWall quote coming out at the end of this season like we did.
That was so fun, and that hit every LaWall was like, well. Yeah. We were still ass, but and it was
we were gonna be ass. We were still ass, but we weren't as bad as they thought.
Yeah,
and I agree with you, Brian. Like, it, although it is a reboot, there are pieces that allow you to root for guys that you remember from last year, like Johnson, like LaWall, like Hammond. It's exciting, and Shute too. Jaden Shute playing the two guard. And so it's a mixture of new and old. We got the Gerdak kid coming in, which I think he's going to end up playing at the four for us as well, as a freshman out of, I think he went to Gonzaga High School.
I think so.
It's a nice team. It's got a little bit of depth. We brought in that 7-footer from the German league in Dorn, who's like already 22 years old. So there's some high level talent. There's some guys who we can rely on for backup minutes. And I love Tyler Johnson. With as good as he was as a freshman, I am so excited to see what he does in year two along with Hammond.
Yeah, and Rex Steiner's gone. So on like a non-basketball thing, I'm a little sad as a wrestling fan that the big bad booty daddy, Big Papa Pump Scott Steiner, is not going to be hanging out in Castle anymore. But
Well, you know what? I may be hanging out in Castle instead of him, because the team might actually be good enough for me to drive my ass down there and watch a game in Castle this year. It's been a minute for me for a basketball game.
Yeah, if you make the trip to Blacksburg, I'll join you.
Yes, sir. But I gotta get to Castle this year.
It's gonna be interesting to see the European influx into the ACC now. Tech's got like 3 or 4, UVA got one, a really good one too, and then UNC got a couple, and then there's a couple other teams getting these Euro kids, so it'll be interesting to see what it looks like. Something's got to give. We got to take college basketball back, because we can't have the SEC have baseball, basketball, and football. Like, no. Something's got to give here. It's always ACC's always been basketball royalty. The conference needs to get back to that.
I think the fix was in for LSU for baseball, though. That was
that was bullshit, man. I feel bad for Coastal. They won a ship a couple years back. I can't remember exactly when it was, but that was years. That was annoying with the coach getting kicked out and everything.
I watched his press conference.
Yeah, I saw that.
He was like, I shouldn't be responsible for another man's athleticism, talking about the flop from the umpire. And I haven't laughed that hard in a long time.
Yeah, well, the ACC had an excellent baseball season. They just couldn't kind of finish the deal at the end and get a team, you know, in the ship.
Well, Chef finally fired Feck too. Yeah. And he brought in a guy from Xavier that had spent time in – he oversaw pitching in the Cubs minor league system. I'm excited to see – something's got to get better in, like, baseball, like – and we got to put some money in baseball and softball. Like, it wouldn't take that much money.
Well, we're putting money in baseball. That's the thing that's a little bit annoying. And you'll see Diablo Fan Account talk about this, is that, you know, we're putting money in there and we can't get out of a regional. We can't get to a regional. Like, it's annoying. It's annoying. The Tech baseball team has been good to very good, but we fund it at a level that deserves perhaps a little bit more success than we've even gotten. But back to your ACC basketball point, Will Wade, that's going to change things just a little bit for the ACC, bringing in Will Wade and NC State.
Yeah, it should add some competition. You know, rising tides raises all boats.
Yeah,
for sure. So hopefully.
He's got that dirty SEC mindset, so that's what we need in the ACC.
And you got Ryan Odom down the street in Charlottesville, too. So
yeah.
It's pretty much they're just bringing in all the old VCU guys now.
Yes.
Did y'all see, and it's relevant to us as content creators in the Hokie space, but Andy Bitter put out an article where he brought up, he was talking about the state of the football team and how basically it has given, the state of the program has given a very small section of Hokie Twitter a very like irrational and just downright like vindictive, vicious voice, and like basically internet tough guys, and like they all hide behind like cat avatars and
well stuff. are we specifically talking about Joe Rogers here? Is that
I think I think Andy Bitter might have been specifically talking about Joe Rogers, but there's probably like five or six, like, I'm not gonna call them like cronies, like my biggest ops have cat avies. But he was like, basically, like, there's no face to the name, so there's no accountability, so there should be no credibility, basically, to what they're saying. And I was like, yeah, like, because the same accounts are going to have positive burners when it switches around. But I just thought it was funny because we all take it from, like, Boundary Corner State of the Union. Like, my biggest fan club was going crazy in the comments on the Boundary Corner stream. But yeah, it was just kind of funny how he talked about how basically it's like this militant group of fans saying ridiculous things that they would never say in person about like the AD and everything.
Look, it's easy to lean in when things aren't going the way you want them to go. I think it's easy to, you know, put something negative out there and just, you know, run up numbers and have fun with it. And I think as long as you are just having fun with it and there's not like this malicious angle, like you were talking about, Dan, behind it, like it is what it is. I mean, I know Pete, you brought up a Diablo fan account, really great guy, right? Like, and I think the content he puts out, it's like, it jabs at the problems, but it never like punches down.
It's fun. Yes.
It never punches down. So it's like, I think there's a balance to be had there. Within that. And I think, you know, sometimes people that intend the right thing take it a step too far. And then sometimes, you know, people go into it with their own intentions and just let the chips fall where it may. And, you know, that might work for some people. That's never been my brand. I'm going to put my name on it. I'm going to tell it how I think it is. I'm not going to necessarily sugarcoat it just because that's what I want it to be, but I'm also not going to, you know, wallow in this shit just because I know that's going to get some extra likes and retweets and things like that. So
I agree. It has gotten a little bit nasty after last football season, especially towards Witt. I mean, a lot of the brunt of everything comes down on Witt, but the program at large, Pry, there's been some things about Pry's personal life and his past that get brought up on X every now and again. No, all of which is over the line. There's a lot of it that is over the line. Some of it is fine. It's some good fun. But like the after the Iranian thing happened and like people are making the jokes about bombing their opponent's stadium. Well, we have our guy talking about bombing Merriman. You know, like that's – look, I know it's not serious. I know it's X, but it's just like it's whack. Like that there's – that's just not right. Don't make jokes about bombing Merriman. Like I don't know. There is a line, even on social media, there is a line. And so I get it. And it has been when Fuente was going through his hard times, like I talked a lot of shit, but a lot of the shit that I talked was like Fuente is now X and X when the spread is within 3 points. Like, it was a lot of numbers based, like, our recruiting sucks and this is why kind of stuff.
Your name is on it too.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. Like, I mean, and I was doing a podcast and you could find me and you could comment and you could rate it. And you could, there was actually like a little bit of accountability for myself personally.
You walk into a bar in Blacksburg and you said something, you heard something that you didn't like, you know what this looks like. You know who I am.
Yes,
you can
exactly.
talk to me about it.
Exactly. And so,
and we never went after Fu, I don't think, as a person. It was always about his inability to win football games. Correct. And like just him being able to adapt to the Hokie culture in general.
I think that, and you know, I think sometimes he leaned too heavily on his introverted guru nature versus being able to hit that outreach that I think the program needed at the time. And I think you can say that, I mean, that is a personal attack, but it's a valid personal attack that's relevant to the conversation. It's not just attacking his personality for the sake of doing it.
When you're the face of a company like a football team, you know, for all intents and purposes, that's what it is. It's a money-making endeavor. The way you represent that program can be criticized, you know, and that's what a lot of us did. But most of it was just like, if he had recruited better, if he had won more, you know, we wouldn't have, none of that stuff would have come up. And I do think some of the stuff as of late with the program, with Witt and all that stuff, it's over the line. Am I happy with Witt? Not necessarily. No, the basketball team and the football team sucked. And
I mean, outside of softball and women's soccer, it was not a great year for Hokie athletics. I mean, everybody either underachieved or was bad outside of those two.
But and I'm also not, I'm not adding him. And I know you guys aren't either. Like, I'm not tweeting at Witt saying, you need to be fired. You know, you suck at your job kind of stuff.
Yeah. You can actually walk up to Witt Babcock and have a conversation about how bad this shit is. And he will have that conversation with you. Just don't, like, he's not going to like let you like wild out, crash out, but like, yeah, he'll talk to you about it. Like, I've seen it happen, you know? Like, it's just when you start getting crazy is when he's going to shut it down. But it's June 23rd, 2025. We're, like, 2 months and 5 days from, what, kickoff? Wow.
I got a birthday in 1 week. Let's go.
Oh, let's go, dude. All the accounts are all the other national accounts are starting to put out their record predictions for people, and I see 8-4 a lot for the Virginia Tech Hokies. And I'm here to tell you, if we go 8-4 this season without having to win a bowl game to do it, I will be ecstatic, because of, like, I will be like, wow, okay, maybe the staff changes were what needed to happen. Probably got better at in-game decisions. Maybe we're really on the right track here. 7-5, I'll accept. 8-4, I'll be through the moon. 9-3, I'm dropping in my pants, maybe. I don't know. Like, I'm getting excited. Like, you know what I'm saying? So I don't know. What do you guys think?
Go ahead, Brian.
I mean, you know, I'm a data guy. I like to see how we're trending, right? So it's been kind of flat the last 3 years. So something to kind of angle that up a little bit, would be nice. I think 8-4 would certainly be, that's what I expect. If the changes go well and we stay mostly healthy, I expect to win eight football games this year. That's kind of, you know, we don't know what will happen in the future in this season. There's a lot of variables there, right? But if we stay mostly healthy and that, the schemes that we brought in and we can get the players to play within that scheme and execute, 8 wins is a very reachable and achievable goal this year. I'm still going to need to probably see a little bit more beyond that, because I need to see us be able to play at an 8-win season consistently. We got to at least put something in that ballpark back to back before I'll be like, all right, we're heading where we need to go.
Well, first of all, 7-5 would be our best season since 2019. So 8-4, I agree with both of you. Like, that's, that Pry saves his job. and everyone's singing a way different tune. In fact, if we went 8-4, I think most casual Virginia Tech fans would be shocked. Like, because I think the thought process on the program right now is so far down after the disappointment we faced that I don't think anyone is necessarily expecting us to win 8 games. Like, I really don't. You'll see occasionally someone will pop up something on Twitter like projected wins. These people are not following the program. Most of the people following the program don't expect us to win more than 7. And even 7, right, I think, is generous. Some people think it's going to go real bad, that we're going to go 0-2, and then it's all downhill from there. I'm somewhere in between. I think 7-5 would be plenty to save Pry's job because you just changed all these coaches. And if you show a little bit of progress, which that would be progress over last season, then him and Witt are safe. Also, you can't really fire Pry without firing Witt because you can't let Witt fire and hire another coach. Yeah. You can't. And so
they're either going at the same time or Witt's going first.
There's no
scenario where Witt's hiring another football coach.
I think 7-5 is much more likely than 8-4, but 8-4 is possible. If you look at like just the Athlon projections, I think 5 of the teams are worse than us, or 7 of the teams are worse than us, 5 are better. So that would lead you to believe that we've finished 7-5 just based on one magazine's projections. But most of them are around that area. And it's going to come down to what Dan said. Like, are we better at in-game coaching? Because if we are, we should be better than 7 of the teams and we should go 7-5 at minimum. But that's a big if. Do the changes to the offensive coordinator, D coordinator, strength and conditioning, do they add up to one extra win, 2 extra wins? I really hope that this is one of those year after the year situations, which we see happen in college football, where like everyone's hyped up about this year. It's kind of disappointing, but it was actually the next year when the talent floor has been raised that we're actually better.
We're looking for a 2004 year after the disappointment in 2003.
That's correct. Yeah. Yes, exactly.
For me, I need to see us win the games we're supposed to win. And like, for all intents and purposes, I think everyone doesn't see us beating South Carolina, and we probably won't. I mean, we might, but we probably won't. And the thing I need to see in that game is I would love to win that game. The Shane Beamer crash out, the press conference would be must-see television. But like, I want the team to come out in that game immediately and not give a shit about the result, basically. Not that they want that, doesn't matter if you win or lose, but I need them to come out like it doesn't matter that this team has all this talent and Shane Beamer's been building whatever. Like, they got Lenore Sellers. Like, I want them to not care about that. I want them to do their job, and I'll kick them in the teeth and continue to kick them in the teeth. It's only what you got, the element of surprise. Like, they can't watch any tape on Tech because nothing's the same. So like, if you come out with fervor and you kick the door down and then you got to stay on it though. Like, you have a shot. And week 2, Diego Pavia can have another storybook year in college football. That's fine. As long as he regrets the day he came to Blacksburg, Virginia and atones for the sins of 2024 and 107 degree heat, then I'm cool. Have your year, Diego, but you're getting your ass beat week 2. That's what I need.
You talked about, you know, dropping it in your pants if we go 9-3. Well, I think beating South Carolina might get that reaction out of a lot of people, because that would be so huge. And we talked about recruiting. Who better to beat than Shane Beamer if you're trying to improve your recruiting? You know, because he comes into Virginia and takes our kids all the time. And if you go down there and you win that game, Kyron looks good, it would change so much about the narrative surrounding this program. And I think it's possible. I know most people think we're going to go get our teeth kicked in. I know the South Carolina fans think that, but they lost so much that I don't think it's unreasonable for us to go down there and give them a hell of a game.
Yeah, I mean, to Dan's point, they have very little tape on what we're going to do, both offensively and defensively, particularly defensively. And to Pete, your point, they lost a ton. They've got their biggest horse coming back, right? They've got him coming back, but they lost a ton of talent on that team. They've got to reload to a pretty good degree. Are those guys going to be game one ready? And is that element of surprise going to be a big enough factor in that game? I mean, if you just line up talent to talent, they probably still got us by a pretty decent margin. But I think there's a lot of extenuating circumstances going into this game where most of those we're probably at the advantage.
Yeah, the talent is interesting because they literally just had 11 guys at the combine. South Carolina did, which was a record. And they only put 5 guys in the draft, but in terms of guys that are going to be on NFL rosters and training camp, it's like 18 dudes from South Carolina that are going to be on training camp rosters. Like it's an overhaul. Like we talked about the reboot with Mike Young. That's what's happened in South Carolina. Now they went out in the portal and they pulled guys and they had a couple good recruiting classes. You know, we talked about Shane's recruiting that are coming up for them. I just think the consistency in that team week one, it's not going to be the same team as we saw go 9-3 for South Carolina a year ago. And I just think to Dan's thing about the surprise, yes, to Sellers getting a new OC as well. Like how will that impact him? So there's a lot of things that lead me to believe that we can be competitive. It comes down to Kyron, the O-line, making sure that we don't let Sellers run wild. Like there are a lot of factors and we'll get into it as the summer goes on, yeah. but like it's there's and it's the Beamer Bowl, right? It's Frank's old team versus Shane. Like it's a very cool thing and it's happening in 2025, which is Beamer's number. Like there's a lot there and it's cool for the narratives going in.
And also like, if you're talking pressure, like, I think there's more pressure on Shane Beamer to beat Virginia Tech with all the, and then all like the, you know, all the people are going to be trying to talk to him all week about him being in the Hokies, like the past. He's going to get frustrated with it because I don't know how much he really wants to talk about it. He's going to try to keep the focus on South Carolina, but everyone's going to be wanting to talk about, you know, the majority of his life was spent around Virginia Tech, with Virginia Tech. Lenora Sellers is getting crazy hype. So is he going to be able to rein that in and not necessarily listen to it? Nick Harbor is great. So they're going to have to contain him, but obviously that'll be talked about in depth as that game gets closer, but it's not necessarily as cut and dry as we're going to go down there and just get our shit stomped. You know what I'm saying? So like, I'm not saying we're winning that game. I'm saying there are opportunities to not lose that game.
It's an opportunity. It's a giant opportunity for this staff, for this team.
I think it would prove a lot. It would go a lot in, I think, easing some of the fan base's trepidation heading into this year. I think there is – it's not so much that we think the wheels are going to fall off the program. It's that we just don't think that this team is going to be anything more than mid. Right. I think we're expecting what we've seen more or less the last 2 years to happen again this year. And you go out there and you beat South Carolina. That's going to, I think, get some people talking. That's going to get some people bought back into what Pry's been selling. And I think that's probably where we saw the biggest fall off this year is that I think a lot of people bought what Pry was selling and we were starting to see a little bit of an upward trajectory. And last year he lost a lot of goodwill from that, and going out there and beating South Carolina would get a little bit of that back.
It would give us something to point to, something to hold on to in terms of like, well, he did this, because Pry has not beaten a good team since he's been in Blacksburg.
Yeah.
You could talk about Tulane. We know that wasn't a good Tulane team with all those guys out. The Liberty win is the only other like good win that we have because it was in Lynchburg and that was like an 8 or 9 win team that year coached by Hugh Freeze. But that, if that's the best you can do, there ain't nothing to hold on to for this fan base. They need something. And that South Carolina win would absolutely be that.
Absolutely.
Man. Well said. Well, you know, no pun intended, I guess, but it's hot as hell outside and had to do an episode to check the temperature.
There we go.
Check the temperature of the program. Got some commits rolling in. Should have some more coming. Thank God, because we need some content out here in these streets. Yeah, but
word is, we got a busy few weeks coming up ahead. So hopefully they keep coming in, and we'll be where I was talking about. We needed to be in faster time than I was expecting, because it was looking pretty spooky. Bleak just 2 weeks ago, man.
Yeah, let's hope it's a good July 4th holiday weekend, and that we're feeling a lot better about this recruiting class by the time that Friday, July 4th comes around. What do you guys got going on for the 4th?
I don't have anything going yet.
So
Miller Lattes.
We're gonna be head out of town. I got a new Jeep, so we're gonna take the Jeep out off roading some here that weekend, I think. So that's gonna be a busy one. We'll do a little camping.
Can't have money.
Yeah, we normally do a party. My sister hosts, and we do a big backyard barbecue, cornhole tournament, whole nine, a little karaoke at night. You know, Dan knows I like that karaoke.
You dabble.
I'm usually DJing. And nowadays, like, everyone's got the kids out. The kids like to sing. So it's kind of taken on a different form as the years have rolled on. But the kids love to get up there and sing. We have a good old time on July 4th.
Didn't you spend your post Vanderbilt loss night doing karaoke by yourself at a Nashville bar?
I was not all alone. Come on now. No,
somebody witnessed it.
Yeah, no, that
the word got around.
So my remember Devin from the spring game? The three of us, we haven't seen each other really since the spring game, but Devin was hanging out with us. He came down and met me for a bit. I got linked up with Barrick that night at some point. Yeah, Nashville. Nashville was so fun, man. If only we didn't have to watch the game.
If only they would have done what they're supposed to do.
Heart, man. That's all I got. That's all I got in Nashville. Sunburn and a broken heart.
Yeah.
I'm gonna see Barrick on Thursday.
Oh yeah?
Yeah, I'm going to Parker McCollum at the new amphitheater in Richmond, and then I'll meet up with Barrick after the concert.
Very nice. So very nice.
He's gonna see somebody else before the concert.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm going to see Brian, too. Yeah. We're doing happy hour.
Oh, sweet.
The happiest hour.
Yes, sir.
I like that, man. I'm hoping to get down to Richmond at some point this summer, maybe hit up a brewery again and record something. If so, I will let you fellas know.
Yeah, I'll be there. You let me know, buddy.
Yeah, we will link up.
Sounds good.
Well, fellas, as always, I appreciate you taking the time out of your schedules to come on here and talk some Hokies with me, even though it hasn't been, you know, great lately. It's always enjoyable to get some thoughts out into the airwaves. People like to listen to what we have to say, at least the drunk ones that come up to me at the bars that say that those things. I choose to believe them. Believe Network, new era. Here we are. Looking forward to all that comes with that via advertisement and whatever else. So, you know, I'm thinking about, I'm going to put out some Terradome koozies. I'm excited. I think I'm going to do that. Yeah, I love a koozie. So, you know, I'll keep you posted on those. But, yeah, man, it's just a nice little early summer check-in. Hopefully, it's just more positivity throughout the summer. Still very wait and see, obviously, about what we're going to see on the field, but it would be nice to have some things to talk about in the meantime.
Yes, sir.
And as always, baby, go Hokies.
Go Hokies.